Welcome again to In the Studio. Redbeard here with the stories behind history's greatest rock albums. Today in the studio, it's the anniversary since a popular all-American guitar band took a detour down a different musical street.
I probably wouldn't have never dreamed of playing anything for the band that was my original material. I was thinking, you know, quite logically that it wasn't suited for the Doobie Brothers, which was a guitar rock, kind of straightforward rock band. I think what I remember more than anything is when we recorded Taken to the Streets, everybody kind of had like a look on their face like, well, you know, I guess this is the direction we're going. Hi, this is Michael McDonald, and I'm in the studio for the Doobie Brothers, Taken to the Streets.
From the outside, to all appearances, life looked great for the Doobie Brothers band in the spring of 1975. They had just scored their first number one hit single, Black Water. The preceding two Doobie Brothers albums had each gone top 10, and the band was about to hit the road to support their much-anticipated fifth album called Stampede. The Doobie Brothers had, in 1975, added former Steely Dan guitarist Jeff Skunk Baxter to their lineup, allowing the Doobies to realize their hope of a powerful three-guitar attack with Tom Johnston and Pat Simmons. In spring of 1975, the Doobie Brothers were arguably the most popular hard rockin' band in America. But right in the middle of that 1975 tour, Tom Johnston, founding member, lead singer and songwriter of such Doobie Brothers hits as Listen to the Music, Long Train Runnin', and China Grove, Tom developed a stomach ulcer and had to leave the tour. There was no way that the band members could have known at that time just how much Johnston's misfortune was going to change the course of their lives and music history. Here's Tom Johnston with me in the studio.
After a while, the road becomes such a factor that it becomes hard to be as creative as you were because you're not as carefree. You're not at all. Your life is scheduled. You're going to be here. You're going to be there. You're going to do this interview. You're going to do the sound check. You're going to go back to your room and have whatever little meager amount of time you got. And then you're back to the stage to do the show. Then you're back to your room. Then you got to get up, throw all this wet crap in a suitcase, and head off to the next town. And if you do that for month after month after month, all those tours to me just become a blur.
Thank you.
On AllMusic.com, writer Bruce Etter calls Tom Johnston's Turn It Loose from the Taking It to the Streets album, I quote, a last look back at their earlier sound. As Johnston's stomach ulcer knocked him off the Doobie Brothers' 1975 tour, meanwhile in Los Angeles, a musician named Michael McDonald was experiencing mixed emotions upon returning home from a successful tour as Steely Dan's second keyboard player and backing singer.
It was, you know, the thrill of my life to that point. And coming back, it was kind of depressing because I kind of got the sense that the band would never tour again. And even though they were leaving all their options open, a lot of the guys left the band in that time period, and Jeff Baxter was one of them. He went on to join the Doobie Brothers. And in that time where I was just that kind of interim time where I was, you know, singing background for Steely Dan in the sessions for Katie Lyde and Royal Scam and some of those subsequent albums. Jeff was, you know, with the Doobies for a good year or two, and Tommy left the group kind of rather unexpectedly due to health problems in the middle of a tour, and they called me, Jeff specifically called me, and asked me if I thought I could come down and learn the show in a couple of days and at least finish out the tour with them because they needed somebody who could sing and play keyboards. And I said, sure. Went down and met him in New Orleans, and we literally rehearsed up the whole show in 2 days and finished out the tour.
recruit Jeff Skunk Baxter, making an immediate songwriting contribution to the Doobie Brothers, teaming up with fellow guitarist Pat Simmons, who also sang on Wheels of Fortune. Michael McDonald took over many of Tom Johnston's vocal duties for the rest of that 1975 tour. McDonald found out quickly that the Doobie Brothers toured long and hard and had been doing so nonstop already for 4 years when Michael joined mid-tour.
They didn't know really if Tommy would just be out for a couple weeks, you know. More than likely, I think everybody thought that, you know, for what was left of the tour, that I would just finish out the tour and Tommy would be come back to the group, you know. He would be feeling better, and they had been on the road a great many years, you know, 6 months out of the years, and it had taken its toll on everybody. And I think the impetus being on Tommy to sing most of the material every night and travel, and it was just really too much. And I came to appreciate that more as time went on, as I was with the band, because it was a real hard-working group, you know, and in some ways it went on to take its toll on everybody a little bit. It was strange. I mean, I remember when we toured Australia, it seemed like all we heard was "Where's Tommy?" You know, and in the press, "Where's Tommy?" And you know, all we could do was the best we could to answer that, which was, you know, well, at the time, we believed that Tommy would be with the group still, but at some point in time in the near future, but that he wasn't for now. And that was kind of a dumb, you know, to most people, that was like, what kind of answer is that?
When the Stampede Tour ended and 1975 came to a close, Tom Johnston's continuing stomach ulcer prevented him from contributing more than a single song to the next Doobie Brothers album. Producer Ted Templeman encouraged every band member to submit songs, including the new guy, Michael McDonald.
The band waited as long as they could to come up with a lot of Tommy's material for the record. He just really didn't have the material I think he wanted to have for that album. And all of us just had like a song apiece. And that's pretty much the situation we found ourselves in. And nobody had a great wealth of material, really. And the pressure was on from the record company. Look, we need another album from the band. And, you know, at that point in time, like I said, we'd become friends, and the guys had kind of invited me to stay on and to actually go into the studio and record, play piano and stuff. What was kind of happening was everybody was kind of submitting songs a little bit, and Tyran went ahead and submitted the song I had done a demo on at his house. So we just kind of threw it down, and Tyran went ahead and played it for Ted Templeman, who liked it, who kind of encouraged the band to record it. I probably wouldn't have never dreamed of playing anything for the band that was my original material, thinking, you know, quite logically that it wasn't suited for the Doobie Brothers, which was really a guitar rock, kind of straightforward rock band, you know. The things I had written were pretty much ballad-type stuff up to that point, and I really didn't see myself as ever coming a part of the band as far as the writing of the band, which was, you know, kind of ironic that it came out that way.
There aren't enough words to say. My pride and I beyond.
Lose an End, written by Michael McDonald, was the first song written by Michael that the Doobie Brothers ever heard. It certainly wouldn't be the last. Later we'll hear from Doobie Brothers founding guitarist Tom Johnston and Pat Simmons. But next, Michael McDonald returns with the story behind Taking It to the Streets. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Michael McDonald, Tom Johnston, and Pat Simmons for the Doobie Brothers' Taking It to the Streets.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm Michael McDonald, and I'm here with Redbeard.
Thanks, Michael. This is the anniversary since his first landmark album with the Doobie Brothers called Taking It to the Streets was released. It was the band's sixth album, though from the moment we heard the album title song, there was no mistaking Michael McDonald's distinctive soulful voice and sophisticated songwriting. In retrospect, Michael McDonald has mixed emotions whenever he hears his performance on the song Taking It to the Streets.
In some ways, it's a strange reaction. Sometimes I feel like it's almost like it was somebody else, you know. And then there are times when I'll remember a certain incident and it makes me feel good, you know, I feel pretty lucky, you know, certainly to have had to hit record with it, but to have met that group of people, to have worked with them, have had the good times that we really had for a long time, and to have left it all behind with everybody, I think, still being friends, you know. I think we're all lucky in that respect. And then sometimes I just wish I had sang the second verse in pitch.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother. I was raised here in this living hell. You don't know my kind in your world. Very soon the time. Thank you.
I think what I remember more than anything is when we recorded Taken to the Streets, everybody kind of had like a look on their face like, well, you know, I guess this is the direction we're going. And we liked it, you know, I mean, but it was very much a collaborative arrangement by the band and Ted, you know, and so none of us really had any foresight, you know. I mean, the song I came in with was just a very kind of, probably a much more gospel-y idea of the song in my head. And for that reason, I thought, well, you know, there's a real good chance that this is just not going to work, but it's a song, and you know. And it was really at those moments when we would sit down and start to play something and everybody would kind of, you know, infuse their particular style of playing to it. You know, I think that it, you know, somewhere between Patrick and myself, it became more of a rock gospel arrangement, you know, than anything else, and therefore it kind of fit the song better. You know, I remember just kind of us looking at each other, going, "God, you know, it's kind of quirky," and you know, and it was fun because it was a time of new music for the band, and for most of us, kind of a new experience, you know.
That was Michael McDonald. Here's the only musician to play on every Doobie Brothers album and tour, singer, guitarist, songwriter, Pat Simmons.
I think, you know, we all have wide tastes in music. I think that's probably what's helped all of us. And in a certain sense, I think we've gone towards a direction that maybe we think we're familiar with, you know. You're playing with other people and you start to look to yourself and you go, well, gee, you know, what influences do I have that are going to cross over and that we can meld and make a good statement that everybody will feel good about and have and be able to, you know, make a convincing musical statement. So you start to look for things, for ways that you can enhance whatever's going on, I think. I think that's the way all musicians really work, who really care and really want to make a good thing. You know, guys can say, you know, I just can't come up with anything. And I'll be honest with you, I've been that way myself sometimes in the studio or whatever. I'll just say, you know, I hear the song, I can't come up with a part. You guys maybe should cut the track yourselves without me and let me listen to it for a while. Sometimes then I'll step back and I see something that I can add to it that'll make it work. Or sometimes I just say, I think it sounds fine just the way it is. And, you know, if I can sing some backgrounds or, you know, do some hand claps or whatever to make it work, I would be happy to contribute that much. And I think that's kind of the attitude, or has been the attitude, of the people in this band at given times when they've had to assume different roles.
But the biggest role change most of us perceived on the Taken It to the Streets album was in leadership of the Doobie Brothers musically. I asked Michael McDonald if that transitional period was awkward when, after the album was released, Tom Johnston rejoined the Doobie Brothers in early 1977.
No, it never really seemed that awkward, and certainly not in terms of personalities. Quite frankly, Tommy was always a real... I always got on with Tommy from the first time I met him. He just struck me as being a really nice guy. Never struck me as, you know, having any undue malice for anybody, you know. Just real talented. I think he just needed a break at that point in time. He didn't have really anything to do with me or anybody. Ted, on the other hand, I think saw it as an opportunity to get an album, you know, recorded and he just saw something for the band, you know, and you know, I guess he saw a way to make this work, you know, and that's pretty much what it came down to. Patrick and the other guys were really always very open to any original material I submitted. Never felt any animosity or reluctance on anybody's part. They were a pretty great group of people that really didn't have a lot of the you know, the jealousies and things that you saw in a lot of bands. You know, I've worked for a lot of bands over the years, and in a lot of groups there was a lot of power struggle and a lot of things that I just never saw go down in the Doobies. And if they did, they were moments of, you know, where maybe we might have forgotten ourselves you know, but it was always pretty much resolved with the understanding that we were friends first, and the rest of it wouldn't matter anyway if we didn't stay friends.
Get on a boat and sail to Rio.
The Doobie Brothers' transformation from a guitar-based boogie band to a sophisticated amalgamation rooted in jazz, soul, and R&B was clearly evident on bass player Taran Porter's For Someone Special. Here again is Michael McDonald in the studio.
One of the biggest things we had going for us years after that playing live was the cross-section of material because, you know, China Grove and Long Train Run and listen to music, they were always, you know, some of the biggest, probably the biggest songs in our set, you know. They were the songs that we really got the crowd, you know, on their feet with. And, you know, the band never left behind anything to go on to. And then there was the added dimension of, like, taking it to the streets and What a Fool Believes and things like that. It kind of gave us a little extra oomph as a live band, you know, to be able to cross that much latitude musically, you know. And, you know, one minute we'd be doing You Belong to Me, and next minute we'd be doing Eyes of Silver, you know, or China Grove. And it really gave the show, like I say, a lot of dynamics, you know, that without either or, you know, one style of music or the other, we might not have had, you know.
Well, I thought you'd be back on the track, but I guess I was wrong, man. For the look in your eyes was the same empty high that you chose. As I ran down the road, I'd forgotten this load was upon you. So the band packed its bags and played on. Goodbye. In the mornings I've tried to reach down.
with composer Tyran Porter on vocals and bass, the song For Someone Special, Love It, from the Doobie Brothers Taking It to the Streets album. Up next, Tom Johnston and Michael McDonald reveal why Doobie's producer Ted Templeman wouldn't even play the advanced mixes of this album in progress for the record company executives. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio for the anniversary of the turning point in the long train running of the Doobie Brothers' career called Taking It to the Streets.
I'm Michael McDonald, in the studio for the Doobie Brothers.
And I'm Tom Johnston of the Doobies with Redbeard.
Thanks again, guys. This is the anniversary of that legendary Taking It to the Streets album that started a whole new era for the Doobie Brothers. But as Michael McDonald notes, the sound to which they were paying tribute certainly was not new.
With the Doobies, a lot of times we were projecting backwards, you know. With a lot of our records that we made, you know, we had a way of talking in the studio, which was kind of a reminiscent of music that was like, you know, 10 or more years before us. You know, it seemed anyway that at that point in time, I think we're like a lot of people perceived us as kind of breaking new ground, or you know, musically. We really saw it much differently. We were always kind of going, well, you know, it's kind of like that Marvin Gaye record. It had this kind of chord change or whatever. You know, this kind of a chord turnaround, that, or changed keys in the, you know, and we were always kind of referring to things that had happened, you know, 10, 15 years before us, you know. And, you know, same with Keeps You Running, you know. I remember thinking when I was writing that song that if the record could come out sounding kind of like, you know, earlier Motown era. And, you know, I think in to be all honest, we probably got carried away with that after a while, you know. And the band needed to swing back the other way, you know, to more of a rock and roll thing. It was just us looking for directions, you know, to go. And it worked for a while, and it really was fun. It gave us something new and interesting to work with.
Thank you.
to this day. The song, written and sung by Michael McDonald, called It Keeps You Runnin' from the Doobie Brothers' Spring 76 release, Taking It to the Streets, is a song that defies categorization. Not quite reggae, not soul, not quite R&B, certainly not rock and roll, but definitely a hit. Michael McDonald has a theory about such musical experimentation.
We tried very hard in the studio, and I think we got results in the studio. And I think Patrick was the same way. Patrick was the same kind of guitar player as I think I am, a keyboard player, where neither one of us were very formally trained. We just kind of grew up listening to the radio and learned to play that way. And so it's kind of an odd amalgamation of influences, you know. You know, the Beatles had such a great sound, and certainly not, you know, comparing us to the Beatles or anything, but a lot of what their sound was all about was what they were trying to do, and what they wound up doing were, in a lot of cases, were probably two different things. You know, when they were trying to play like American R&B acts, you know, and they were redoing Isley Brothers songs, they really just couldn't help but sound like the Beatles because they didn't really have that background.
Doobie Brothers producer Ted Templeman wisely decided to restrict work-in-progress mixes of the unreleased Taking It to the Streets album from being played for their record company executives, a very difficult task. Michael McDonald believes this was critically important, a decision at a delicate time in the band's evolution.
I think he was wise, because the basic tracks were as ragged as any basic tracks, you know, but he wanted to get it to a certain point before he played it to them, and in the meantime, I think they were constantly, you know, the big question in their minds was, you know, if you're not going to get Tommy into the group, we're in trouble, you know. And it wasn't that Tommy didn't participate, because he did. He had one of the, what I consider one of the better tracks on the record, you know, Turn It Loose. But Warner's executives, in answer to your question, they were a little nervous about that. They wanted, you know, more than anything, to somehow force Tommy back into the group. I know the band was nervous to a large extent, too. I don't think the guys really foresaw themselves without Tommy. I wasn't really at that point. I was kind of living with the assumption that, you know, this bubble is probably going to burst any day now, because it seems so unnatural that, you know, probably the worst thing I could do would be to comment on it one way or the other to anyone, you know, which is pretty much the position I took. Was just, you know, whatever happens, happens here.
Well, what happened was the album Taking It to the Streets went all the way to number 8 on the U.S. chart, becoming the first Doobie Brothers album ever to be certified platinum. Before that, however, Tom Johnston would leave the Doobie Brothers a second time in 1977. It would be a decade before they would all play together again. From the outside, Tom Johnston would be able to see how certain promoters with their own agendas would later attempt to manipulate the marketing of the Doobies simply as Michael McDonald's backing band. Here's Tom Johnston with me in the studio.
Well, that wasn't Michael's choosing, I don't think. He's a sweetheart of a guy. You know, it's just that's the way. I don't know if the company did it, or I think the public might have done it as much as anybody else. It's just that's the way it happened, because Michael has such an original sounding voice and style that it kind of culled him away from the band, if you will, whereas we sound more like, you know, in the old days when we started, we were a band and a bar band and what have you, and it just kind of that pervaded on through the years, even though everybody's not so much a bar band anymore, but it still goes back to everybody's in the same boat type thing. And I like that. I like it that way.
A lead singer-songwriter replacement is without question the most dangerous experiment in rock. Just ask Van Halen. Heart transplants and liver transplants have been successful in medicine, but a head transplant in rock and roll? That's scary stuff. And yet 40 years ago, the Doobie Brothers somehow pulled it off. And according to Michael McDonald, they even wound up convincing us that two heads are better than one.
There seemed to always be kind of like two audiences out there, too. You know, there was the audience that the Doobies had always pretty much traditionally had, and then there was the new audience that had kind of come along from 1975, you know, on. It was, it kind of went both ways, you know. I mean, we always left the crowd on their feet, and that's what we set out to do. And people seemed to handle the fact okay that Tommy wasn't performing with the band anymore. But, you know, he was always there in spirit. You know, there's no way we could, you know, get to the end of the show and go into China Grove. And you know, when the crowd jumped on their feet, they jumped on their feet because they loved that song and they loved hearing the Doobies play it. And in that respect, you know, I think Tommy was always there, you know. His presence certainly was always there. And when we went into Long Train Running, crowd went crazy, you know. listen to the music was always our encore, and that was always one of the best parts of the show for the audience, you know. So Tommy was always, you know, kind of part of the band, whether he was there physically or not, you know.
Written by guitarist Pat Simmons and Jeff Skunk Baxter, and singer keyboard player Michael McDonald about Michael's East St. Louis home, that's Carry Me Away from the Doobie Brothers, Taking It to the Streets. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests, Tom Johnston, Pat Simmons, and Michael McDonald. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2016, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brune. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.